So I got Aaron Marsh on this podcast. He's the guest. But before we get to that, I've been going down YouTube holes, and I'm fucking paranoid about some shit that I want to talk about.
You're pretty sure there was a torpedo attack,
though? Oh, no doubt about that, yeah. I think. No doubt about that.
No, it was just confusion. And events afterwards showed that our judgment that we'd been attacked that day was wrong. It didn't happen.
Look, the Gulf of Tonkin incident was now declassified a staged event. It didn't really happen. It was just a PR thing that came out of a wire. Oh, I'll just say that this ship exploded. No one's really gonna check up on it. There's a lot of ships in the Navy. Let's go to Vietnam. And then there's all these protests. People don't want to go. And then, you know, 50,000 casualties or something like that. And Americans, who knows how many Vietnamese died. It was a giant bloodbath. And that seems like what they want. They want bloodbaths. They want war. And any kind of reason to go to war is elevated by the media, which is owned by the same people who are owning companies like Raytheon and Halliburton. So they have a vested interest and a sales team called Fox News to pitch you the wars they want, the chaos energy.
This is a very difficult, very complex issue. And the person who's being casual here is the president, who seems either unwilling or unable to understand just how devastating the threat of a nuclear Iran could be. Devastating potentially to Israel, devastating to other American friends in the Middle East, devastating to the United States if Iran were to give a nuclear weapon to the terrorists. So this is something that for the president to react in that way, I thought was really unprofessional, unpresidential.
Now, is it not obvious that they're all controlled by the same organization, the same PR firms, the same corporations trying to pull the levers to manipulate public opinion because we have the power, so they need us, so they need to fucking control our minds and say that we need to war with other people, and that's just not true. And whoever starts to throw a bomb through someone else's house is the asshole. We've been the asshole too many times. Whatever happened, and now we're sending bombs. Whatever happens, and now we're gonna drone kill these people. Too many, you know, there's too many, we're not looking into enough of the whatever-whatevers, and we're seeing that these are the same people who are just been in charge too long. You got people like Chuck Hagel making speeches.
If Assad is prepared to use chemical weapons against his own people, we have to be concerned the terrorist groups like Hezbollah, which has forces in Syria supporting the Assad regime, would acquire them and would use them. That risk of chemical weapons proliferation poses a direct threat to our friends, our partners, and to U.S. personnel in the region. We cannot afford for Hezbollah or any terrorist group determined to strike the United States to have incentives to acquire or use chemical weapons. The Syrian regime's actions risk eroding the nearly century-old international norm against the use of chemical weapons, which Secretary Kerry has noted. A norm that has helped protect the United States homeland and American forces operating across the globe from those terrible weapons. Weakening this norm could embolden other regimes to acquire or use chemical weapons.
It's like Colin Powell.
Our concern is not just about these illicit weapons, it's the way that these illicit weapons can be connected to terrorists and terrorist organizations that have no compunction about using such devices against innocent people around the world. Iraq and terrorism go back decades. Baghdad trains Palestine Liberation Front members in small arms and explosives. Saddam uses the Arab Liberation Front to funnel money to the families of Palestinian suicide bombers in order to prolong the Intifada. And it's no secret that Saddam's own intelligence service was involved in dozens of attacks or attempted assassinations in the 1990s.
And even after all the speeches are debunked and deflated to just fucking bullet points in a neocon think tank, whatever they pump out. Weapons of mass destruction. They're an imminent threat. All of that is bullshit and always will be. Until, and you know, what they're saying does not match up to the reality. The lies are bursting at the seams and they're coming at you in all different ways.
Snowden.
Traitor.
Okay.
The fact that he has released all of this material has done damage to American national security.
Talk a little bit about how the American surveillance state actually functions. Does it target the actions of Americans?
NSA and the intelligence community in general is focused on getting intelligence wherever it can, by any means possible, that it believes on the grounds of sort of a self-certification that they serve the national interest. Originally, we saw that focus very narrowly tailored as foreign intelligence gathered overseas. Now, increasingly, we see that it's happening domestically. And to do that, they, the NSA specifically, targets the communications of everyone. It ingests them by default. It collects them in its system, and it filters them, and it analyzes them, and it measures them, and it stores them for periods of time, simply because that's the easiest, most efficient, and most valuable way to achieve these ends. So while they may be intending to target someone associated with a foreign government or someone that they suspect of terrorism, they're collecting your communications to do so. Any analyst at any time can target anyone, any selector anywhere. Where those communications will be picked up depends on the range of the sensor networks and the authorities that that analyst is empowered with. Not all analysts have the ability to target everything, but I, sitting at my desk, certainly had the authorities to wiretap anyone, from you or your accountant to a federal judge to even the president if I had a personal email. Subverting the power of government, that's a fundamentally dangerous thing to democracy. And if you do that in secret consistently, you know, as the government does when it wants to benefit from a secret action that it took, it'll kind of give its officials a mandate to go, hey, you know, tell the press about this thing and that thing, so the public is on our side. But they rarely, if ever, do that when an abuse occurs. That falls to individual citizens, but they're typically maligned. You know, it becomes a thing of these people are against the country, they're against the government, but I'm not. I'm no different from anybody else. I don't have special skills. I'm just another guy who sits there day to day in the office, watches what's happening, and goes, this is something that's not our place to decide. The public needs to decide whether these programs and policies are right or wrong. And I'm willing to go on the record to defend the authenticity of them and say, I didn't change these. I didn't modify the story. This is the truth. This is what's happening. You should decide whether we need to be doing this.
No, I don't think Mr. Snowden was a patriot. Mr. Snowden's been charged with 3 felonies.
If they want to get you, they'll get you in time. But at the same time, you have to make a determination about what it is that's important to you. And if living unfreely but comfortably is something you're willing to accept, and I think many of us are, it's the human nature. You can get up every day, you can go to work, you can collect your large paycheck for relatively little work against the public interest and go to sleep at night after watching your shows. But if you realize that that's the world that you helped create, and it's going to get worse with the next generation and the next generation who extend the capabilities of this sort of architecture of oppression, you realize that you might be willing to accept any risk. And it doesn't matter what the outcome is, so long as the public gets to make their own decisions about how that's applied.
Knowing how the vampires think. They want to go to war. They drum up and there's all these vampires and there's all these cockroaches. Ah, we want to go to war with Syria. Yum, 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 yum. And then you say, fuck no. And that's what happened. Everyone said, fuck no, and it didn't happen. They receded. Just as far back as the normal person can see them, or they can confuse on the nightly news.
But I would say that a lot of folks have a visceral reaction to public people presenting evidence post-Iraq where they have serious doubts without sort of seeing all of the evidence, and not everybody has or does. And also, there's just an instant reaction by a lot of people to say, whoa, here we go again. This is going to be Iraq. This is going to be Afghanistan. And I understand that. I am very sympathetic to that feeling. If I weren't in Congress, in the administration, I didn't have access to what I have, I'm sure I'd have the exact same reaction. I'd probably be very questioning of public people. Now, I believe that the aftermath of the Iraq experience and Afghanistan leave a lot of people saying, we don't want to, see our young people coming back in a body bag and so forth. But that's not what we're talking about. And what we have to do is make clear to people that this is, we're not talking about war. We're not going to war. We will not have people at risk in that way.
The Department of Defense has developed military options to achieve these objectives. And we have positioned U.S. assets throughout the region to successfully execute this mission. We believe we can achieve them with a military action that would be limited in duration and scope. General Dempsey and I have assured the President that U.S. forces will be ready to act whenever the President gives the order.
It's little rips in the seam. You see things like Edward Snowden. He says, I work for the NSA, and I also have an oath to uphold to protect the Constitution from enemies, foreign and domestic. And when you are a domestic institution institutionally breaking the Constitution, you are breaking your oath. You are not upholding your oath. And then look, one guy upholds his oath to protect and defend the Constitution, and he's tried to set to Gitmo to have his mind erased, and they'll kick his fucking body in the ocean when it's time to put a fucking, replace his heart with a cinder block in the graveyard of whistleblowers under the sea, where clones of ex-presidents also reside. Sometimes even the clones revolt. You gotta take them out. I don't have time to explain this to you, and this is, I'm talking way out of my pay grade now as well. Anyway, now, here are some dick jokes. You ever get a blowjob when you have to pee and you're not sure exactly what's gonna come out, you know what I mean? You're like playing Russian roulette, you got two bullets in the chamber, you have no idea which one's gonna fire. You know, especially in a glory hole situation, you know? You never know which one is cool with your peeing. Just be like, yo, I don't know how I got here. I just thought this urinal felt good for some reason. What makes me worried is when I also see clips like this.
Hi. You had mentioned how important it was to Madison, the freedom of conscience. So I'm wondering how you feel about the fact that John Kiriakou, the whistleblower who exposed the torture program, is the only one currently sitting in prison for it.
And well, please finish. I think there is, and the Supreme Court has wrestled with this too. You're welcome to believe anything you want to. You're welcome to say almost anything. But what you can't do is violate national security ordinances that would endanger the country. Edward Snowden is a case in point. I think he's a traitor. And I feel it does not bode well for our society that he's being valorized for having betrayed his country.
Don't you think so? Detaining 76 people who were cleared for release in Guantanamo Bay is betraying our country. Indefinite detention is a little worse than.
This is off point.
Exactly. I'm just curious if you think that Madison would be okay. I think that Madison would be rolling over in his grave.
Well, I respect your right to speak your mind, but I also reserve the right for myself and Dick not to answer your question.
I didn't think you would.
So that was Dick Cheney's wife avoiding a question on torture, and as she avoids it, she elicits an applause from... She's like, I'm not going to answer questions on if my Gestapo is doing torture. And then they clap. And these are Americans now. Like, can we have a sense of history that, like, normally, you know, like, Vlad the Impaler, like, torturers, you know, are, you know, should be looked down upon and should be questioned. Don't be the ones applauding. Don't be the ones, you know, down there in the bunker with Hitler going, wow, Hitler, your last speech before you blew your brains out was pretty good. Because you're on the wrong side of history, my friends. Anyway, I'm about to go to the Greek festival in Northridge. Here's another joke. Feel guilty for masturbating. I used to feel guilty for masturbating because I grew up Catholic, you know, and I thought Jesus was watching me. I thought my grandparents were watching me, making me feel, you know, guilty beyond the grave. But now I feel guilty for masturbating because I'm an environmentalist. I feel very guilty about the Texas-sized plume of tissues tumbleweeding in a landfill somewhere. It's gonna make a Native American shed a tear or some shit. I feel bad about it. They used to just jizz right in an open field. That's why our topsoil's so good. America's breadbasket. Okay, I got all that off my chest. And now, here's the episode with Aaron Marsh. I did it, fucked up a little bit. The beginning got cut off a little bit, so, but you'll figure it out. Here's episode 81, Highway Diary, with my guest, Aaron Marsh. You know, you go up and down. I had a really bad show at the Liquid Zoo last night. I'm still traumatized about.
I don't think you can take the Liquid Zoo serious. Like, a bad night at the Liquid Zoo may not actually have to do with you, and I hate being like, it's not my fault, it's the audience's fault. No, sometimes that audience is nervous because they're about to go up.
Yeah, for the first time or something.
Oh, yeah, exactly. And it's really hard to get them to be at a comfortable point if they're about to do their thing, you know?
Yeah.
And at any level.
Well.
Like, I've seen professional comics watch me, and I'm, like, just wanting to get them to laugh. And, you know, you're like, I didn't make them laugh. And my friend's like, dude, yeah, it's because they're going next.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to make them laugh.
And then you get, like, desperation in your eyes, you know, and then the flop sweat comes.
Oh, exactly.
And for me, it's like I care so much, even at an open mic. I'm like, if these people don't laugh, then what the fuck am I doing with my life? Catholic priests on trial. A lot of bishops and all that kind of thing. A cardinal is on trial, too. And he had a defense in court today. He said, well, you know, I made a lot of those kids come, so who's to blame me?
I get so fucking pissed off. Anyway, speaking of what are we doing with our lives, we both are always on Facebook, and that's how, you know, we connected. This pretty easy. As soon as I texted you, it was like you hit me back in like 5 seconds. Yeah. I really appreciate that. You know what I did last night? I was chasing Mexican Jeff Carasalis around Studio City to the Oyster Bar trying to get him to do the podcast.
Interesting.
Fucking, some people are impossible about booking. And then, you know, it's very refreshing when someone gets right back to you, let's do this.
Did he do the podcast yesterday?
No! He did the Oyster Bar, and I go, hey, man, can we do it now? And he goes, oh, I'm going to get notes outside. Like, him and his buddy were going to give each other notes on the set, and then he just left.
That's
and I was
funny.
Like, dude, like, some people, are, like, get it. Like, oh, I want to do a podcast, I want to expose myself a little bit, I want to mix it up, I want to have a chat. What's more stress-free? Anyway, it just drives me fucking crazy, fucking guys.
It's funny, I actually had an argument with him that was so good, it should have been recorded.
Oh, yeah? What happened?
Well, because he complains about, like, the things like me hanging out at clubs or even doing clubs. Because he's like, oh, it's all a bunch of cocksuckers and all the nerds. And you're like, dude, but you don't understand that comedy, at the root, is a team sport where we all, the people that root for each other become a team. And then those people go out and do things for each other later on in life. That's why you watch somebody like a Ben Stiller cast the same person five times.
Right.
Because they like working with them, and they know that they can, and they know that it's easy, and that everyone's going to have fun.
And it's like there's like a class of open micers that you see at every place that you go. It's like, oh, there's that guy, there's that guy, you know.
Or even a couple years ago on like our level, like when I first started, I would see the Dead Kevin guys sort of doing it together at the open mics.
Right.
And then they clicked and were like, hey, let's become Dead Kevin, and the story is now history. They're on the road, touring, tons of YouTube hits.
Comedy groups always emerge out of this.
I feel like it all comes up in clumps and teams. So why get mad at clumps and teams? Even if you're not on that clump or team, support that clump or team for what that is.
And, you know, like a bunch of, like, fighters who see, like, MMA fighters, you know, they have, like, a gym that they all work out at and beat each other up at. And we like to bust each other's balls. And then, you know, when we fly to Japan to take on some kind of steroided out fighter, you know, you root for each other. So
are you an MMA fighter?
No. Just taking the analogy too far.
Yeah.
You know, when you fight roided up Japanese people, you know that whole thing.
Oh, yeah, that happens all the time.
Speaking of Facebook, this is something you posted. I wish my neighbors fought in English.
It's true.
They're always having blowouts in Spanish or something.
I posted that last night. You are on top of it.
Yeah.
No, just last night when I got home at like 2:30, there was a full-out yelling match between a couple, I believe.
Yeah.
And I think they may have been breaking up, which is like fascinating.
Yeah.
But you're like, I can't understand this.
So you're immediately trying to snoop that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, come on. I'm awake. I'm just in a room, and they're yelling so wonderfully. Like, it's not like my friend commented on it. I wish my neighbors did too or whatever. Or my neighbors don't, because I know that her neighbors fight and it's a domestic problem where he will hit her and she's called the police on him, and then I knew that it wasn't raising to that. It was more going to raise to one of them is going to cry and leave.
Right.
And I want to know why.
Right.
Because it's 2:30 in the morning. You've now made it publicly loud.
Yeah.
Let's do this.
Yeah, you're already kind of like waking all the neighbors in the building. You might as well know the contents of who sucked whose dick or what happened, you know?
Oh, man. Sometimes it's just I gotta leave. But I'm just curious. Why wouldn't you want to know why your neighbors are fighting?
Yeah, it's good. People should snoop more.
I put a microphone in their place.
Here's something that you said on Facebook as well. My mother used to tell me that she knew that I'd grow up to be addicted to drugs and end up in prison.
That's true.
I've grown up to be a big disappointment to her expectations. Well, now you are really addicted. I think we're both addicted to stage time, like heroin, you know?
Sure. Absolutely.
Just that intense level of attention. Something is wrong in our brains where we need to be the only one talking in the room because we don't feel heard.
No, that's definitely a root of it. And I think that's even more the root of it for me, where it's like, clearly, my mother and I had communication issues.
Yeah?
And
what religion are you?
I was raised Mormon.
Ah. You were raised in Utah?
No, I was raised in Arizona and San Diego.
Wow.
Mormons are everywhere.
I didn't know that.
You know how you see the missionaries everywhere?
Yeah.
Because they're trying to make Mormons everywhere. That's what they're doing.
So they're trying to make a commune, and they're like, hey, let me have like six bitches in this house. Nobody say a word, you know?
You know, it's a little more grassroots, where it's like, well, all we need is you, and then you will make kids, and they'll instantly already be Mormon.
Right.
That's why they're all about kids.
So how orthodox were they? I mean, like, you could be, like, Jewish and just, like, you know, show up every once a year on Passover, whatever. Maybe do a Sabbat dinner. You don't really know the words. You don't really. Or you could be, like, full curly Q orthodox Jewish, you know. Like, and then, or you can have ceremonial underwear and nine wives, or you could just be, like, a little guy. Like, at what level were your parents in Mormonism?
Well, you know, Mormons don't do the multiple wives thing anymore.
Really?
They haven't since the state of Utah was founded about 250 years ago.
I gotta get up on my research.
The Mormons did it during the Mormon trail when they were walking all the way from New York to Utah and men were dying off and someone needed to take care of their families. They decided that they could marry the other people to provide for the family that has lost the senior male. And then when they were done actually hiking, they stopped that.
Right.
But that has stuck with them forever.
Yeah, that bad rap.
Well, and anybody who's into that will go to court and try to cite that they're Mormon, so that's why they're illegally allowed to do it, and they always lose that court battle. And the Mormons are the first to walk in there and be like, we don't believe in that. That is no one's religion.
Mm-hmm.
you know, like, but it's...
That's interesting.
Yeah, but they were pretty into it in the sense that my dad was a missionary, and he actually baptized my mother on his mission and kept up with her as pen pals. And then my brother is now a bishop in the Mormon church because he really felt that it was a value that we held in the house. My brother is the only one that still does Mormon practice. Like, my dad and my mom will say they're Mormon, but I don't believe either one of them have attended since they were divorced about 15 years ago.
So we were saying earlier that you were working on a YouTube channel, Daily Rehash.
I did that today.
And you have a thing called Headline Punchline coming out.
Mm-hmm.
And you were saying that that YouTube channel, the Daily Rehash, is Mormon-owned. You know, was that your connection into there?
It kind of was. A different comedian did it. And she was like, she got to talking to them, and they were like, oh, I'm Mormon, and I'm Mormon too. Like, and she realized they were all Mormon. She's like,
yeah.
I know a really funny Mormon guy. It would be perfect for this. And so they reached out to me, and they were just like, we're always into more Mormons. And you're like, I'm really Jack Mormon. Like, you can't see on the podcast, but I have a lot of tattoos.
Right.
I don't show up anywhere without coffee. You know, like, that's what it's going to be. And they're like, oh, it's totally cool. Just be funny. It's all we need.
That's weird.
Yeah, but we actually got along instantly. As soon as I walked in that room and met them, Mormon or no, it was like we already had some sort of connection. It worked out really well.
Yeah.
And that should be out by the time this podcast hits.
Go to Daily Rehash YouTube channel and check out Headline Punchline.
With Aaron Marsh. Yeah.
Keywords into Google. Plug them in. Get your information. What else should we talk about? Yeah, oh, I was working on this show.
I'm just trying to read your notes. This is like, I've never seen...
Well, I'm going to go off this.
All right, you're right.
A little bit of thing. So I worked on a show, and actually I don't want to give out too much information. It was a reality show. And one of the executive producer actually asked me if I was Jewish at one point. And I said, no, I was raised Catholic, you know, but now I'm like atheist or whatever. And then like a couple days later, I got fired. So, you know, religion does have something to do with it. Getting ahead in Hollywood sometimes, you know? Sometimes you can wave your Mormon card around and all
of
a sudden...
Did they ask if you were Jewish or part of the tribe?
They asked if I was a part of the tribe, and then I go, what does that mean? And then they go, are you Jewish?
I feel like if you say, what does that mean, you've already let them know you don't know.
Yeah.
Because even I, a non-Jew, knows what the tribe means.
And it seems illegal. It seems like you shouldn't be able to ask that question.
Religious discrimination is illegal, isn't it?
Yeah, you can. If I brought that up in HR, like all of a sudden they were like, yeah, we don't, you know, it's like,
oh, they'll always fill out the paperwork for something else. They'll never say something like that. They're like, we had to fire him because he was Jewish. It would be like, they would be like, we had to fire him because he's late all the time. You'd be like, I was never late once. And they're like, yeah, prove it.
Yeah. They're really good at paperwork, you know.
Oh,
and I
Jews?
Think it's a thing about when you're Orthodox, there's so many rules.
Yeah.
So many rules. You know, you have to bury a plate if it had meat and dairy on it. You gotta, you know, with all this to stay Orthodox and stuff and kosher. And you know what else the rules is? Laws. So I'm not saying that, you know, they're naturally litigious, but I mean, come on.
Does that mean you attended a Passover? What do they call that? A Seder? Did you go to a Seder?
No.
Oh, what you were describing sounds like Seder.
I'm just smart.
Okay.
I just see things. I just look at that religion. I look at how many rules there are. And it's like if you're raised with having to keep track of all those rules, it would make sense that the law would be something that would make sense, right?
Yeah.
It's not like, I don't know. People get so like,
people that like rules, like laws.
That's that. That's racist. That's this. No, it's just like, you just observe cultures. Oh, that's interesting.
You know something I don't like about that? Is that when someone calls out, like, in the sense of, like, Jerry Seinfeld, they're like, everybody you're putting on your show is white.
Right.
And a male.
Right.
It now diminishes everybody he asks on that show that doesn't fit that description. As
right.
if, like, well, he's doing that just to shut them up. It's like, well, what if he really likes that other person?
Yeah.
You know, we all knew he was going to get around to getting Elaine Boozler.
Yeah.
You know, let's not diminish why Elaine Boozler's on the show.
Yeah.
You're like, you're hurting the people that you're trying to defend.
And Chris Rock's been on that show. I mean, it's like...
Oh, yeah, exactly.
It's not like he doesn't have black people or whatever. It's just those are his friends. And let me tell you something. In high school, there was like, 12 black people. They all sat at the same table. They didn't mingle.
We should have complained to
them. You know
what
I'm saying?
You're like, you know, you guys don't have enough
white
males.
Sometimes if you don't have white friends, it's not only white people's fault.
The NBA should have a complaint. should be like, why don't you have any Latino stars? Not just on the team. We want a team built around a short Latino man. Why has that never happened?
Well, because he's got, you know, too many kids to practice basketball.
No, because it's about actually playing basketball. Because everyone understands that that's about your ability to do what it is.
Yeah. So you used to work at Flappers.
Correct. I'm even wearing the shirt today.
You're wearing the shirt. You're still representing. They fired you under auspicious, shadowy circumstances. We can't get too into this. But you wrote on Facebook one time, if your paycheck is less than your tips, your employer isn't your boss.
That, I believe, is true.
So is that, were you mentioning this?
That was actually completely unrelated to Flappers.
Right.
I mean, I was just actually more along the lines of watching servers and the shit they were dealing with the managers.
Yeah.
Because, like, it was like I was just at a restaurant and I was watching a server working and getting shit on by their manager. And you'd be like, I realized, you know, I'm actually going to give her more money for the hour that I'm sitting here than he's going to pay her for the hour.
Right.
So technically, I should be allowed to tell him to shut the fuck up and let her just fill up my water.
Right. So the manager needed so much micromanaging that, like...
I think so. Like, I really believe that it was more about his power struggle, where he was, like...
Right. He just loved that, like, being in charge of a young, innocent girl.
It may just be about being in charge. I don't know if it was necessarily about, like, oh, this is a young girl, I better be in charge of her, as much as it's just, like, you know, I don't have much happening here, but what I do have is the power structure of this building.
Right.
And so I'm going to complain about the little things, even while the big things are happening. Just everyone knows that I'm the dog that's barking.
Right. Yeah, some people can't handle power of any kind.
That's true. There's only one way to find out who those people are, though.
Work on
them. Give them power.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then people that cling to power, I don't know, tend to be sociopaths. They're the ones who tend to cling
to the
top. Which
is weird, because to want to be somebody like the president... You have to really want the power.
Yeah.
And so we've made it a race where it's not about the qualifications of who can do the job the best as much as who wants the job the most, which isn't necessarily who should be the president.
Yeah. Also, it seems like the more you can, like, keep a secret, the higher you go up. You know what I mean?
I don't know what you mean.
Anyway, what's weird about... comedy. I'm having like an existential crisis a little bit. You know, last night I did terrible at the Liquid Zoo, and it's like no matter how many times you do well in a row, you have one bad show, and it's like the next time you can also. It's always possible that you can fail miserably the next time.
You start back to zero confidence.
Yeah, you're always back to like, well, this could go fucking nowhere. I can, you know what I mean?
Well, honestly, like the
you
oddity
get
of stand up
out of the stage one day, like everyone loves you, everyone's saying good job, and then the next time it's just you just suck. It's like you have off days.
Oh, dude, totally. And that's part of being a comic, is that one day you feel like a god, the next day you feel like below even an amoeba, where you're just like, I can't. If I could be any smaller, I would, because I don't want anyone to see me leave the room the way I just acted.
Yeah.
But the other side is that, like, it seems like beauty working like at a Flappers, where you see the comedians, like some big names on a regular basis,
right,
working things out, is you watch their level of not care.
Yeah.
You know, where there was just like, dude, that did not work. And they're like, yeah, I know, that didn't work. But they know in their head that they work. You know, it's just like, oh, yeah. Those sentences, probably not. You know, like, or maybe I brought them into the room the wrong way. But it has nothing to do with me as a person. They're able to separate that.
Yeah.
To be able to build the material.
It's also like the order. Like, you have to have a couple little jokes up to make them start laughing. Then you can go to darker places with them once they're on your side. It's like, and you can lose them, but once they're kind of on your side, most people will go with you as long as you keep on pumping jokes out every now and then, you know?
Yeah.
So it's a whole fucking mind game. It's like hypnotism, you know?
Well, and that's the fascinating thing about watching something like... I was in the Comedy Store and Dave Chappelle came in.
Yeah.
And he did not know what he was going to do on stage or why. And I would say his laughs per minute were lower than the average comic that we were watching go up, because we were watching everyone do their showcase stuff. I mean, he doesn't need to. He doesn't care. He's like, no, I just want to talk to the people.
Yeah.
You know, and to watch his, like, level of, like, how we were, like, on his side the whole time, even though, like, if it was, like, somebody lower than, like, if it was me. So like that much lower than where I'm like not needing to win them over to let them know that I'm funny. Like it was like they would, I'm sure I would have lost them within 5 minutes.
Right.
But because of him, we're like, you know what? Let's let him ramble for 5 minutes because I bet you the next 10 after the rambling is worth it.
Right, right, right. And now everyone's like trying to just be like, wow, this is my moment that I saw Chappelle drop into the Comedy Store. It doesn't happen every night.
I wish it did.
I want to talk about something else. I've been in contact. You know, you ever go down YouTube holes where you're like, oh, I didn't learn this about cobras, or I didn't know that the CIA did mind control experiments. Oh, I didn't know that UFOs were seen by NASA or whatever. And then, you know, I hate the YouTube video that's labeled like, you know, Nazi UFO alien conspiracy, and then it's just like Bush getting out of like a Air Force One, and it's like, da-na-na-na. Da-na-na-na, da-na, and it's like, there's no information in this YouTube video. If you're labeled UFO Nazi alien conspiracy, I want some facts. Not just fucking medium close-ups. Anyway.
So a bunch of hype around nothing.
Around nothing. But anyway, there's this guy on YouTube right now. His name is Reverend Kevin Annett. And he's claiming that he is going to arrest Pope Ratzinger, the current Pope Francis, like David Cameron, Queen Elizabeth.
She claimed to see evidence of those cult sacrifices going on at the school. So, I mean, you know, we issued summonses against Elizabeth Windsor, against Joseph Ratzinger. None of them responded. But what's significant is during our common law court case, no one representing them contacted us to deny or refute the evidence. Now, under the law, of course, when you don't contest something said about you publicly, that's a tacit admission of guilt. You're not contesting the charge. And that, under the law, is often results in a court finding against the defendants. And in this case, that's what happened. So the thing to realize now is that the Catholic Church, the Crown of England, and these other institutions are lawfully disestablished. They're what's known under international law as transnational criminal bodies, which means they are involved in crimes against humanity, and they don't have any lawful authority anymore. That has tremendous repercussions when you think of, you know, citizens of any Commonwealth country, citizens of England. They are obligated now to not obey the laws or the dictates of the so-called rulers, because if they do that, they're colluding in a crime. And it opens up tremendous possibilities for social change and, you know, really reclaiming the law in our country from these criminals in high places.
And crimes against humanity, okay. And for child sacrifice. You know, it is weird, like, I don't know where you think about this, but I, you know, it's like, we know that Ratzinger, like his fingerprints and his signatures were on documents that were like, hey, this guy's a kiddie fiddler. Let's move him to Connecticut. What could go wrong? And so, like, if you're doing that,
because the kids in Connecticut are ugly, so that's perfect.
Yeah. Okay, what the fuck is going on? Like, the Roman Catholic Church is a relic of the Roman Empire, which should have draconian punishments in place and an oath that the priests have to upkeep. You know what I mean? Of, like, getting their head chopped off if they veer off from their pulpit of what they're supposed to be doing, you know?
I was waiting for the question.
Well, what do you think about this whole thing? Is this possible? Do you go down YouTube conspiracy theories? What do you think of all this stuff?
I would say I try to stray from conspiracy theories. That person, that particular person, sounds potentially mentally ill.
Well, he's a Canadian reverend. He said he saw some stuff. And then he started exposing it, and then he got fired as a reverend, you know.
Uh-huh.
And now he's some wayward whistleblower.
I'll tell you something about the mentally ill. They've all seen some stuff that doesn't exist.
And they have and a briefcase.
And they believe it. And that's what part of mental illness is that you see something and connect dots that don't exist.
Right.
And now they exist to you, and you try to bring other people into your stream of thought.
But how would you reconcile, like, a priest, like, getting away with that? The cardinals knowing stuff and them trying to pay off families, or, you know, what I mean?
I don't think religion should really exist anymore. Like, I don't understand. Like, it's so outdated.
Right.
And clearly just corrupt.
Yeah.
You know, which is exactly not what it preaches. So, like, the idea that even the followers are still following is baffling to me.
Me too.
That would be like me trying to find a Circuit City and going into what used to be a Circuit City.
Yeah.
And standing in line, thinking I'm holding a product that doesn't exist, and then yelling about how no one's helping me. It's just like, no. What you're thinking of is in the past, and it's not real anymore. Because as time moves on, some things don't exist anymore. We don't have dinosaurs.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Yeah.
And
once
we need to accept evolution, which church is not accepting of.
Yeah. And a doctrine doesn't evolve, you know? Like, let's say some other high-level Scientologist was like, oh, you know, I studied L. Ron Hubbard all day, and I thought he was wrong about this one thing. Everything else is perfect. This one thing I think he was wrong about. They're like, nope, L. Ron Hubbard's word was the most perfect word of any human ever. It is stamped in time as perfect forever. Well, that sounds like a perfect psychopath, someone who has no room for anyone else's opinion of all time, and you're trying to have that chug along and ruin people's real lives as time tumbles forward.
That's why I love Jesus.
Well, it's like, yeah, you can
he
love...
He is the perfect psychopath.
Yeah, no, I think he was a good guy, but, you know, to claim that a bunch of cardinals sending hush money to parents of child abuse victims has anything to do with a humble life of Jesus, who wore a robe and sandals and wandered around the desert, you know, with a bunch of dudes.
Oh, if anything, he'd be a really liberal guy. Like, he would not be against, like, the healthcare. You know, he'd even be, like, concerned about the fact that we're paying for it at all. He's like, this shit... I mean, and Jesus was against taxes, I believe, too. But I gotta say, taxes have a good purpose when they're handled well.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's so hard to figure out.
And they were, like, they had, like, gold coins, and they were, like, put him on scales, and everyone was coming up to them giving money, and he was like flipping the tables over, you know what I mean?
Because he was the party starter.
He was like, fuck this shit.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
You make him sound like he's in an Andy Samberg video.
He was a rebel. He was a rabble rouser.
I like that about him. He looked like a hippie.
Have you heard the good news about Jesus?
Oh, no.
But it's like, yeah, you can also be like a, and then you can look at him, his work in a book, and then close that book, and then open another book.
And it doesn't
match
up. My
savior is also Tom Sawyer. And, you know, J.D. Salinger's Catcher in the Rye. And I've also read the Bible. And I've also read other things. There's more books. You can't choose one savior. Be your own savior. Be your own scholar.
You saying this because you know I have a Malcolm X tattoo on my
No, head? I'm just saying this to the people. Okay. I just want to talk to the people right now. Good. Can I go on a 5-minute ramble? I know I'm not Chappelle.
No, it's your show. You're right. I should hold back.
But what do you think about, like, you know, all this new drone technology that they're just kind of, it seems like they're targeting Americans, you know? That doesn't worry you?
Part of me is excited for any advancement in technology.
Yeah.
The other part of me is just worried about how we're going to exist as a society if we give all of our jobs to machines.
Right.
Because you're like, I feel like we're working towards a direction where unemployment's just going to get worse and worse and worse.
Right.
And so that's not going to solve a problem. It's going to create a whole new problem. But I think it's like cause more problems than it solves.
It's like for every, like, perfectly robotic sex wife that you could buy, you know, in the future.
Well,
for every Google car, there's also a drone that can shoot a Hellfire missile. So, you know, as technology grows, you know, there's pros and cons. Do you think that it would eliminate trophy wives if they made a horror robot that, like, with a perfect ass that, like, stayed nice and tight with, like, you know, rubber washers in her asshole?
Well, no, I'll tell you why. The whole point of the trophy wife is you can't have this too. This is mine. I own this. It's great and perfected, and you will never get it. If it's a machine that you could also buy that's perfected, it takes away the mental aspect of why you even have a trophy wife.
Right.
Like, yeah, because you could just go buy one too.
Right. But then, it, you know, afterward, you can still, if you have kids, let's say, for example, they can still get your money instead of this trophy wife, you know?
Well, yeah. Well, the whole point is you keep renewing the trophy wife.
Oh, you get, like, it's a lease situation.
Yeah.
You always get an upgrade.
Yeah. You're not supposed to... The wife thing was the confusing part to me.
I wonder if you could, like, lease a whore and then upgrade your model. Like, is there
high-class
agency that would arrange that?
I think you could just talk to someone individually. That's the whole sugar daddy system.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And then at a certain point, you just go, this has been really great. We're going to replace you. And they're upset, but it was totally a lease situation, so they have to leave now.
Yeah. You fucked up. Exactly. I see a little wrinkle next to your eye. You're 26. Hit the fucking, kick the brick, sister.
Yeah,
some
exactly.
86-year-old fucking billionaire.
You're starting to make a sense politically, and I don't want that. We didn't want that coming out of your mouth.
I don't know. It just seems like to me when you peel back laws that say, no, 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 it's okay. We don't need a warrant to shoot someone in the head with a drone. We can read all your emails. We can. It just seems like these cockroaches like gobbling up in a certain direction. You know what I mean? It just seems like if you're writing a law that gives you a power to shoot a guy in the head with a drone, at a certain point, like Dick Cheney's just going to have a bunch of drones flying around, all targeting whistleblowers, and he's going to put them up to like an organ or a grand piano, and he's going to put a Darth Vader costume on, and Dick Cheney's going to, he's going to stretch out his fingers, and he's going to start typing out a very sad song that pumps chaos energy in the form of vaporizing his opponents. You know what I mean?
Sure.
If you're writing those laws, you are wacky. You know, you're. Mm-hmm. It's very strange that that's real. This is not that he attached that drones to an organ, but why wouldn't he? If he made it illegal, so he could. You know.
It sounds like one of those in the near future science fiction movies.
Yeah.
Like Blade Runner. When we all watched Blade Runner, there was like the moment where we're like, you know, this is a little too possible. I know that's not possible right now, but in 50 years, this is too possible.
Yeah, it's starting to get there. I don't know. It just drives me crazy. Where it's, you know, it's, they wanted to go to war with Syria, and then we're all like, fuck no. And then they went, and they retreated into the distance, you know, after his fucking PowerPoint presentation Chuck Hagel just made. Exactly like Colin Powell made a PowerPoint presentation. He's like, Iraq has weapons of mass destruction, blah, 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 as the defense secretary. And now under Obama, Chuck Hagel did the same thing. He's like, we should need to go to Syria. They have sarin gas and Syria's, we got to go kill those people. And it was like, it seems like that's their only end goal. It's just more liquidizing of brains from high elevations. That's all they're into.
I wish I was caught up on everything you're talking about. Oh, my God.
Oh, I'm depressing you now?
Yeah, see, how is that not depressing?
You got to go down more YouTube black holes and educate yourself.
No, that's exactly why I don't go down those black holes. I go down a totally different path of pictures of boobs and kittens and puppies.
It just goes boobs, kittens, yeah. Boobs, masturbate, sleepy. You wake up, kittens, boobs.
Yeah, totally. I'm in public now, so it's all puppies, some sports.
Yeah,
yeah, but it, like, I don't want to put that much energy into why I should be angry. I know that it's out there, and I know there's a lot of really terrible injustices.
Yeah.
But I can't spend too much time focused on that, because I also have to live on this planet.
Yeah.
It's not like I can choose to get into a rocket ship and just take off to another one.
I know. I just... If a whole system is fucking me in the ass, I want to know how the dick works, you know? I want to...
I just want to know where the dick is so I can stay away from it.
Right? Yeah. It's everywhere, man.
Yeah, I know. A bunch of tiny dicks. Tons of tiny dicks. Which is actually the name of my autobiography. Tons of Tiny Dicks by Aaron Marsh.
Growing up in summer camp. Mormon summer camp. Tons
of
tiny
Mormon
dicks.
I did Mormon summer camp.
What was
I only
that
saw
like?
One dick there. And it was in a really appropriate context. I woke up really early before anyone else, and I was like, so I walked outside my tent, just sort of hanging out because it was my moment to myself.
Yeah.
And somebody just stuck their dick out of their tent and then peed. So the tent that had just a dick come out. Nobody made any noises, and it started peeing. You know, and it was like, that's an appropriate dick context for like a 14-year-old to see.
Yeah.
I didn't even laugh. It was just like, oh,
that's so funny you say that. What is it relieving when you see it and you're like, oh, that looks like mine. Okay, good. Like the first time, I remember in high school, some kid, like, you know, we were just changing in the locker room real quick. Some kid had, you know, boxers on. He just sat a weird way and picked his leg up. I saw his penis and testicles. All of us, I wasn't looking for it, but
it's
boom,
okay.
It just flopped out. And I said, that looks exactly like mine. I don't have a freak penis. I feel great now. You know?
I was never
afraid. I had nothing
I had
to compare it to.
I was never afraid.
I just didn't know.
I don't know. But I discovered pornography at a young age, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Like, I mean, it was before the internet. It was in the 90s. But I want to say I discovered my dad's pornography around 12 or 11. So it was about the time that I was even thinking about, like...
Was it like a Playboy or some hardcore shit?
No, it was softcore. It was like, you know, like there's like the tapes, like how we used to have VHS tapes when we'd record movies.
Right.
My dad recorded a movie, and I was watching it, and the movie that was after it, because like everyone ordered to get on the bed, because I was an insomniac my whole life. And after that movie, my dad taped a nudie movie, and they showed flaccid penises. I don't recall any erect penises. And then it was like, so I was watching the softcore pornography really young. So I knew like what penises would look like, and I was like, oh, all right, this is pretty much that.
Right.
For some reason, erections never really. But there were three brothers. I must have seen their erections at some point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just out of a tent or something.
Just
out of like tents. They just poked out of a tent.
We had lots of.
And then just. And then
a lot of tent erections.
You see the penis go back out, and then the person just went back to sleep.
The only time I was ever scared of any of that stuff was the first time I ever ejaculated. I was afraid.
Yeah.
Did
you see like a kaleidoscope of colors before you ejaculated and you passed out for 24 hours after?
No, this would be gross. I actually came into my hand.
Yeah?
And was like, do I need to let my parents know that this happened because I might have to go see a doctor? Do I have to put this back in? Like, I did not know. Like, it was like, was this supposed to come out at all? Like, this is... And
yeah.
So, like, I was like, I'm going to test this out and then... Like, the couple days passed, and, like, there was not, like, a problem.
You just felt
I thought
great.
I was gonna... Yeah, I thought I was gonna feel, like, something missing.
Right.
And instead, I felt more of a recharge, and I was like, I'm gonna try this again. And I was like, you know what? Let's put the talking to the parents on hold.
Right.
Let's just master this thing.
Let's
here.
Just ride this train till the wheels come off now.
Yeah, exactly. This is, like, what John Coltrane experienced with heroin, I think, because that's...
Yeah.
That was the beginning
and
of
now,
masturbation.
And now stage time.
Now stage time.
Just keeps going.
I just masturbate on stage.
What so
I
what
do
you, what are the, like, what's the weirdest thing that you did? Like, you know, I imagine you also do screenwriting and sketch and, like, you
sure.
always have a lot of irons on the fire. Like, what's the weirdest thing or, like, the most extreme thing you did to try to break the fucking doors down and get into entertainment?
I'm trying to think. I was in some really bad YouTube videos. I mean, that's happened.
Yeah.
Yeah, where they're really clearly about just trying to get girls' boobs on screen and stuff. And you're, like, there trying to act like this is not exploiting people.
Right.
So that was... I mean, that was... But that wasn't super
how
weird
did
as
you
much
get,
as it was desperate feeling.
Without giving too many details away, how did you get involved in that YouTube video? Like, did you just apply to,
They
like,
approached
respond?
Me about doing boom mic work, and then they approached me later about helping them write for stuff.
Right.
And they had some exposure, some success on their videos where you're like, oh, cool, 80,000 hits. You know, but it was just like, it was really just about, can we get boobs?
Yeah.
You know, like, it was like those sort of things where it was just like, and then the video would be called something weird, but the screen shot would be a girl in her, like, bra, and so you'd be like, ah, is this the right thing? Is this not the right thing? And I did maybe 4 or 5 videos with them. So I'm like, well, it's exposure, and it is a comedic outlet.
Yeah.
And then it was like, no, this is just exploiting and it's not helping me. And
yeah. When you're just green screening in front of a topless pillow fight, you're like, what am I doing with my career?
Well, I wasn't getting paid either. If they were paying me, it would be different. I probably would be like, still there now.
Yeah.
But this is the greatest boob job of my whole life.
I mean, it's one thing if you produce your own content and you're like starting from the bottom, but sometimes there are people like attain certain levels of success and still expect everyone around them to work for free constantly, you know?
I wouldn't even go as far as calling what they had success as much as it was just a desperate measure for attention.
Yeah.
And in this city, you could really get other people to get involved with it.
That's, I mean, everyone's a
That's the oddity,
is
like you're
measure.
Watching, yeah, because you're watching the girls, and like, when I was watching some of the girls just not be comfortable.
Right.
But like, you can almost see in their eyes, where they're like, well, I mean, but it is going to get hits for my acting. And you're like, eh, we're all in the wrong room.
Yeah.
No one's actually here for sincere purposes, so... What do you do? But I can't think of anything super, like, off-putting where it was like, can you go be racist for something? Yet.
But you would. It's on the table.
Depends on what it is in the context of why I'm doing it. If they're mocking the racism, I'll do a crazy amount of racist shit.
Yeah, I love racism. It's pretty fun.
I mean, like, well, when I watch South Park, we're like, South Park's offensive. You're like, no, they cover a lot of offensive topics.
But also, like, the roast battles and stuff.
Oh, I love that stuff.
You know, yeah. That's where I feel like the roast battles is, like, the best expression of racism. Because you just say, people just say racist shit to each other. But it's everyone is in the same boat of, like, let's say the meanest thing
possible.
Oh, yeah,
let's get horrible.
And it'll be funny.
Yeah, the Let's Get Horrible show. That sounds great.
Yeah, it's fucking great. I remember, so I'm like, I got the screenplay, you know, I'm trying to get it out there. And I kept calling agencies and I was like, hey, I want to send you my screenplay, you know. So I got a bunch of agencies on the phone. I would call them and they would always say, oh, you need a referral. You need a referral. Yeah. From what? Another agency? Yeah. So you're saying in order to get in this agency, I need a referral from another agency?
Real moment.
Wow. We're in downtown Burbank right now. Whatever happens, happens.
That may have been a fight my neighbors had yesterday.
Only it was in Spanish, so you have no idea.
Exactly.
So I got so I kept hearing about this referral business. So I got a stamp ordered in the mail, and it said, there was like a little place where you to put your JPEG of your logo. And I put the William Morris Endeavor logo, and then I put ref no, and then I made a stamp of this. So I would stamp all my shit that I send into agencies, William Morris, ref no, and then I would write like 268. So, hey, where's your reference? It's right on the thing. It's William Morris, reference number 268. And then if they're like, I don't know about their reference number system. Oh, well, you don't know about William Morris's reference number system? That sounds more like on you. How about you read the shit that I send you now? And you know what I mean?
So did that ever work?
Didn't work at all.
Okay.
But, you know.
Lesson learned.
Lesson learned.
I won't do that.
I can't forge a stamp and make up a system that doesn't exist. They expect that to get me in the door. But, you know, you live and you learn. You try any way you can. You got to lie. You got to cheat. You got to lie in your resumes. Uh-huh. You got to cheat the system. You know.
Absolutely.
Crawl in any way you possibly can.
I don't know if it's about lying, cheating, and stealing.
What do you mean?
I mean, I've been able to submit for a couple of things, and it's come across sort of honestly. Through referrals, even.
What?
Yeah.
They work? They're real?
Those are real. People have actually said that I should be looked at, and then they would help me get looked at. Nothing's ever come of that. But I feel like I've discovered the first step of a ladder.
So you're on the bottom.
I'm on the bottom. Well, I'm definitely not at the top.
Exactly. You got to climb and cheat and steal your way to the top. Coming up, and I just want to talk about some upcoming podcasts.
Sure.
June 10th, Jeff May.
Like Jeff
comic.
May?
Comic. He's I meet him always at the Liquid Zoo, and he's always hanging out outside the Liquid Zoo. And he's the fucking funniest guy to bullshit around with.
He is, and he's always been super nice with me, but I was so reluctant to take him in as a human.
Why?
Because just like his act says, he looks like a bully.
Yeah.
And so I just always felt like somewhere he was judging me on the inside, and it took me...
He just kind of looks like a bro. He kind of has that bro energy.
And it took me like 7-8 months before I was like, you know, he's never been anything but nice to me. It's just my defenses are up.
Right.
And I put my defenses down and it was totally worth it.
You were judging him for being a bro and you thought he was going to bully you?
Totally.
Because he looks like someone in high school that would fuck with you?
Yeah. 100%. And I had my defenses up for months.
Yeah.
And then I was like, you know, wait. I put him up for no reason. He's a good dude.
He's hilarious.
Yeah.
And then I promise you, June 17th, Tuesday, Reverend Kevin Annette, the guy I was talking about before, he's trying to...
be in your show?
Yeah.
That's insane. All
right. He's trying to arrest Queen Elizabeth, Pope Ratzinger, and the current Pope, and all kinds of like British MPs.
And he's going to be on your show.
He's going to be on my show. He's phoning in from Canada, and he's going to be on the podcast, so look forward to that. And then June 24th, Jackie Cation's going to be on the show. And I'm around there going to do Dork Forest, her podcast.
I think she's one of the funniest women on the planet.
Yeah, Jackie Cation's fucking great.
She's hilarious. One of my favorite comics, just period.
So, an eclectic group of people coming on the Highway Diary podcast. A Liquid Zoo comic, Jeff May. A reverend in Canada is trying to arrest the Pope. And Jackie Cation, so... quite a
series. Undiscovered national treasure, Jackie Cation.
She's
hilarious does she have to be before she's a celebrity? Come on. She should be a celebrity.
Yeah, I mean, people know about her. You know, you see her at Nerd Melt. You see her around.
She gets the shows. The comic community definitely knows. But outside of the comic community, it's like no one else knows.
Yeah.
And you're like, she shouldn't be a secret. She's too funny.
She's fucking great.
Yeah.
I got some shows coming up. I'll be at Flappers on Tuesday, June 17th, the 9:30 show. That's when they put the heavy hitters on. Tuesday at 9:30 in the Yoo-Hoo Room. And then I've also got a show at the Ice House in Pasadena, July 13th, Sunday at 7:30 p.m. on Stage 2. So
fantastic.
Check me out. That's my first show in the Ice House. And also go to www.herecomesgodot.com, where the web series is at. Click through the Highway Diary RSS Amazon link. Buy some shit on Amazon. It'll, they're getting most of the money. They're the ancient alien overlords who will in the future send your package by drone. They're getting most of the cash. They'll only give me like 2% of that. But hell, helps hosting this. Aaron Marsh, anything else you want to tell the people of the world?
We mentioned it earlier. Just look me up on the Daily Rehash.
Daily Rehash.
Yeah, but it will be out by the time this gets out.
And that's Larry King's YouTube channel, right?
Correct.
Now, what's he doing? It. And you didn't.
He owns his own. Like, he still does his show, but only on the internet now. He like retired off television.
Right.
But the guy can't stand still, and so he still goes on, and he interviews people for the hour and a half.
Yeah.
It's like, it took me a long time to realize that, like, what Marc Maron does that I love was before Marc Maron, Howard Stern did that. But outside of the comedian realm, Larry King would do that with some very serious people. Some really...
Yeah.
He just finds the most intriguing people and sits down with them for an hour.
Yeah.
He's fantastic.
And that's the way to do it. Now he doesn't have CNN or any kind of sponsors or whatever.
Well, exactly.
Telling
He's
him
the
what
only
the
voice
to
telling
do.
What to do. Exactly that.
That's what I think is really hopeful in the future. I feel like the information that we consume is getting very decentralized, which I think is very good for,
It's both. It's bipolar. At one side, it's going to be very, very healthy that nobody can have the absolute power grips on the media, because that's unhealthy.
Yeah.
But the other side is like, it makes every source just as credible as every other source. Which is also like, well, we're going to have a harder time figuring out who's credible. But I would rather have that than have one overlord be able to control and actually censor out parts of history.
Yeah. Because, but I mean, let's say you have someone like phone, Halliburton, like the New York Times. Hi, I'm a New York Times reporter. I'm calling for Halliburton. They're going to give you the public relations department, which is going to sanitize, whitewash, cover up, manipulate every real piece of data that comes out of there. So, you know what I mean? It's like, how much can you really trust any mainstream source? Because they kind of know how to deal with the media now. All these evil corporations
Oh, yeah. The media is not new to them. They've learned how to manipulate it as far back as Lincoln.
And look, as the presidents get worse and worse, their press secretaries get harder and harder.
One day we're going to have a president that's actually accessible through podcasts and tweeting, sort of. Maybe not those exact outlets, but something similar where it's like, oh, no, you didn't watch the president on the internet? He's that once-a-week show where he talks about what he did for the last week.
Yeah, he just fucks around. He eats a sandwich for the first hour. It's like Larry King. It's just free form. He does whatever he wants.
Kansas, line two. Go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah. Michelle's giving me shit. If he just broke shit down for you like that, and he just dropped the, I'm going to talk like this, and everything say was written by lawyers.
That. He's always going to be totally...
He's not going to be like, you know, like... Maybe Eleanor Roosevelt,
president?
Like Eleanor Roosevelt stopped giving out blowjobs, and Teddy got on the fucking radio one day and was like really pissed off about it, you know?
That'd be hilarious.
But we could relate to the president more.
We definitely can, and they're going to get more and more accessible as time goes on. Because
you think
everything's
so?
Too accessible. Yeah. Think about the amount of access we have now versus what we had as a child.
Yeah.
Now imagine in 50 years, if it only even is 1/4 more accessible, that gives us access to be able to actually do something like reach a president and get a response within the same hour.
Yeah, but I mean, so, I mean, there would be so many questions. If he actually did respond, there would be so many questions coming in every day that it would be impossible. Unless
they wouldn't even try. They wouldn't even try. But imagine if he did, like, just weekly updates. That'd be amazing.
What if he uploaded his brain to some kind of computer, and then you could just ask Obama's brain, or whoever the president is, brain in a computer, and it's like what
he
really
so
thinks
funny
about
is,
it.
Like, I would have zero interest in that, as opposed to being like, what if you access Stephen Wright's brain? I'm like, now we're talking.
Stephen Wright?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't even know how his thoughts connect to each other.
Probably
his thinking is just so different from my own.
He's fucking crazy, because he was genius. Huge in, you know, the 90s. He won an Oscar from a short film.
Oh, he was huge in the 70s and the 80s.
Then he was kind of like a hermit for like 20 years. He didn't come out. He had the social life of J.D. Salinger, the Unabomber, in a fucking shack for 20 years. And then he did another stand-up special in like 2007 for Comedy Central, When the Wind Blows or something like
that.
And he hasn't had another one. He hasn't had another one for a while. It's like he'll just go out.
He had 20 years between albums.
Yeah.
Like, the difference is that back then, not everybody was as accessible, so we just like, oh, he's back? Cool, I love him.
Yeah.
And it was no big thing. And now that everyone's so accessible, he's like, I'll just come out when I want to. We're like, it's like he's not even around. You're like, no, he is. He just doesn't give a fuck to chime in to let the whole world know where he's at all the time.
That's
just probably healthy.
Yeah, it is good. It's, you know...
I just feel like he's not as enthralled by celebrity as other people.
Yeah. He's just like, I'm going to write, you know, 75 jokes. When I reach that number, it could take me 25 years.
Yeah.
When I reach 75 jokes, I'm going to put out another album.
Yeah.
And then after that album's done, I'm only going to, you know, it could take, you know. So
well,
he only
said
cares
after
about
he
the art.
His first album. He was really into getting his first album out, which has become a classic. I don't even remember the name of it.
Yeah.
But then he would go do shows, and people would know every word of his set. So he had to hermit himself out for, like, just a couple of years to build a new hour. And then he's like, I want to keep this one. And so he waits until he has multiple hours before he releases an hour so he can still go on the road.
Right. It's weird now.
Yeah. When you have such jokey jokes like himself, it's hard to be able to try to tell this to somebody twice.
It's got to be hard to memorize it, too. When you're just standing there, joke. No 10-minute bits to kind of that tie in that have multiple things. It's easy to memorize. You know?
But I love it so much.
That's your favorite comic, Stephen Wright?
He's one of them. He's definitely in the top three, yeah.
Wow. Who's your Mount Rushmore comics?
Well, I mean, you gotta say Richard Pryor.
Yeah.
You just have to, and I love him. And then... I want to go with Stephen Wright because he's just so different from everybody else. You can't... I mean, like, you gotta get the jokey guy in. Rodney. Rodney changed everything.
Rodney Dangerfield.
And, we only get one or two more.
One.
I'm taking back Rodney. Sorry. Stephen Wright's gonna take that spot. I'm gonna put Chappelle and Eddie Murphy.
Yeah.
Chappelle, Eddie Murphy, Stephen Wright, Richard Pryor. So three black guys.
And Rodney. Oh, it's Stephen Wright.
Sorry, Cosby. Sorry, buddy. You're great and everything, but those other guys hit me really hard.
I would put Jim Norton, Dave Attell, Patrice O'Neill.
Good guys.
I don't know who's the fourth one. Maybe Dave Chappelle or Richard Pryor. Probably Dave Chappelle, just because he's... I think every like comic that comes around every so often... like has the previous one shoulders to stand on, so they like are a more evolved version. So it's like, I think is it Killing Them Softly? Dave Chappelle, Killing Them Softly.
Yeah.
It's like one of the best albums of all time.
I consider that the best hour of all time.
Skanks for the Memories, Dave Attell is pretty fucking good too. And I think that's only a CD. Like you can't even get the.
Yeah, that's just the CD.
Yeah.
And then there's I think Raw's one of the best hours ever.
Yeah.
It's hard to fuck with that. Live on Sunset Strip, where he talks about shooting his car and the heart attack, and that's amazing.
Do you like Eddie Izzard? like Dressed to Kill or
you know, he was never my guy. And I recognize it when I watch it. I literally will watch it and the whole hour just be like, that was really clever. This guy's so good.
Yeah.
But I'll never get that gut laugh. But yeah. The whole time I'm just like, this guy's great.
Yeah. He's very entertaining.
Exactly. I'm like a grandma watching him. We're just like, oh, this guy, he's going to go places.
Look at this nice boy.
Yeah, that's really how I feel about him when I watch
it. He's saying things.
I'm so happy this guy exists, but he's not my thing.
I also like Stephen Merchant, Ricky Gervais.
Yeah. Carl Pilkington.
Carl Pilkington.
That trio is amazing.
Oh, my God. How funny is Idiot Abroad? Have you seen that?
Yeah, it's amazing.
Oh, my God.
I don't know how it's not more famous.
And the Ricky Gervais podcast is fucking great. I also knew them from their XFM days. There's like this archive when they used
to
be
on. Oh, yeah. That's how I found out about it. My brother got into that archive.
Oh, yeah.
And then it became his obsession. And I was like, I've never heard of this.
Yeah.
And then he made me listen, and you're like, oh, no, wait, this is really good.
I like Stephen Merchant's Hello Ladies. It's a really good HBO stand-up special. But then he had a show called Hello Ladies. Not very great. But what are you going to do?
I've seen his stand-up specials.
I think...
They're good, but they're just not as good as the other things. But that's not... That's because the other things he's released are so good.
Yeah.
That it's really hard.
I think
The
Office, the British one... is among the best series of all time. It's like everything about that is like perfect. Like the original British Office. It's only 12 episodes and it's fucking flawless.
Dude, the Christmas special made me cry.
Hi guys.
Hello. Hi guys. The Extras Christmas special as well also made me cry. I got emotional.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like, that's amazing. The comedy took me to this place.
Yeah.
Like he really had a whole set in time and purpose for all this. He's so good at that it's almost like for him to do stand-up, how incredible would that hour have to be for it to match the places he's able to take you in sitcoms in 12 episodes?
Right. What about the Mighty Boosh? You like the Mighty Boosh?
Didn't get into it.
Really?
It's too Mad Libby. If it gets too random, once it gets too random, I lose interest.
So like Family Guy too, you don't like that?
Wasn't into
Family
Guy.
Or you're a South Park guy.
I've been to South Park. Wasn't into The Simpsons. Wasn't into...
Yeah.
What was the one with the meatball?
It was Cartoon Network, Aqua Teen Hunger Force.
Yeah. For some reason, that never quite hit me. That got really popular. And I consider these things that I just missed the boat on. Like, I'm like, you know, that's not very good. It's just like some that just didn't, it just missed me. It just missed me by that much.
Yeah.
You know, like, U2's not my band, but I understand that they must be phenomenally great to be able to touch the amount of people they touch as deeply as they touch them. I just missed the boat. I wish I could be on that boat and know how great U2 is. I'll never get it.
Yeah.
But I'm missing out on that.
I like some of their songs. I don't know. It's just like
Bono
is...
I like a good handful of their songs. Do I love them and would I follow them on tour the way other people do and cry if I saw them in concert? Probably not.
There's something about rock stars that are... like, have such a level of ego and also think that they're profound.
Yeah.
His personality rubs me the wrong way.
Yeah.
When I hear him talk, it's just, he's not smart enough to feel all the things he wants you to think he's feeling.
What if he is? I don't know.
I don't know.
Because his fans believe that the answer is yes. So I just don't relate to it.
It's very weird. Very weird. It's you can't believe how hard it is to have a balanced personality when you're like playing for like 80,000 screaming fans every weekend. It's like you
for 30 years.
You gotta really have a distorted sense of yourself after that.
That's true.
I mean, you know, a lot of action going down in Burbank.
Yeah, Burbank is a lot louder than I remembered it.
What is going on? Is that coming from in that factory there?
They're doing a lot of plumbing stuff.
So you're a sports fan.
Big time.
You got a Chicago Cubs hat on right now.
Uh-huh.
Is that where you're from? You're from Chicago?
My family's from there. I've lived there for a couple years, but I really would say San Diego until I was 12, Tucson until my 20s.
Right.
Then Los Angeles.
So Chicago was really the first 3 years?
Chicago was actually right after high school.
Oh, okay.
So it was actually more like 18, 19, 20.
Your parents had a lot of Mormy business like around different places, so they would move?
No, it was when I graduated high school, I wanted to pursue comedy in Chicago, but I just couldn't
So you left
the living after a while.
So you didn't.
I left.
Did you
mess.
Go to? Did you go to college?
No, I did not.
You didn't go to college. You right after.
I went one semester. It's not worth mentioning. It's one semester.
In Arizona.
Yeah.
ASU or something, or
U of A.
Okay. And you were like, "Fuck this."
Yeah, I'm like, I hate everybody here. There's no way I can survive 4 years of this. I can't.
What was making you feel like that?
I hated the students more than anything.
Why?
I didn't mind
the academics.
Were
they stupid?
Yeah. And they were entitled, and they would always, like, there was always the guy in the class that would have, like, he wanted to always throw something in to let everyone else know he was smart or something.
But right.
I also heard this, I'm like, is that on the test?
Yeah.
We're just preparing for tests to be able to get us a better job later. Let's keep our focus on the right things.
Yeah.
Let's not bring your insecurities into this.
Yeah.
Oh, hey, what's up, hot chicks? If we could bring your insecurities into this, hot chicks. You know, like, it was just so many distractions.
Yeah.
I just was, I knew I wasn't going to make it through.
It is it's a very interesting time going to college and stuff. You know, there's a lot of cliques. There's a lot of things going on. There's I freaked out one time. I was a writing major in Eugene Lang College, and, you know, a lot of entitlement. You know, just kids are lazy, and they don't want to do anything.
Yeah.
They don't want to work. They want to get around having to do anything at all costs. And so I, like, wrote something, and then I printed it out. I went to Xerox place. I spent, like, $50 on copies. I handed them to everybody. And then, like, during notes, like, no one was saying anything, and, like, no one read my shit. And I fucking freaked out. I was like, do you know how many, fuck, every second how much money is ticking, is being blown by all of our faces that we'll never see again? Every second that we're sitting here, and you're going to tell me that, like, you know, I went to the Xerox place, I got everyone their own copy, no excuses, here it is, you don't have to, there's no file that you can pretend you didn't open from your fucking computer, you lazy cocksuckers. There's nothing. I gave you the physical paper for you to read it, write notes. And, like, two people kind of skimmed it, and I fucking had a fucking meltdown.
True. And you have substantial debt from that.
Well, actually, I don't, but
I'm
one of the lucky ones. I also went to Temple University in Philly, and that just fucking, racially, that town is really fucked up. It's really racially divided. I don't know if you've spent any time in Philly, but...
Never been through
it. It's, like, really... There's tensions. There's palatable tension between the races.
That's what I like in my neighborhoods. I'm just kidding.
Tension?
See, yeah, I want it to be like a Spike Lee movie. I want every neighborhood I live in to be like a Spike Lee movie.
Someone's get pissed off. They're like, pay me at the beginning of the day. Then they throw a garbage can through the window.
Yeah, exactly. I'm like, this is love and this is hate speaking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because everything's Rosie right Perez thing. Does a really intense sexual dance in front of your window.
I'll take it. It's not a problem. And then Sam Jackson can dance for crack money. I switched over to a whole other Spike Lee movie. And then we all shoot Malcolm X at the end, and it's a happy ending.
Boom. He goes down. Blood support. All right, Aaron Marsh. It's been a pleasure having you on
this
podcast.
Thank you very much,
Highway Diary. That's another episode of the Highway Diary in the motherfucking bag. Thanks to my guest, Aaron Marsh.
Thank you, buddy.
Boom, boom.